podcast from the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's Office of National Mission. This is God's Mission Here.
Thank you so much for joining us. I'm your host for this episode of God's Mission Here. I'm joined with Dr. Bev Yonke and the Reverend Dr. Greg Walton. And I would love for you to introduce yourselves before we get started on this all-important topic to worker wellness, which is talking about lay leaders and the support for our church workers, along with how RSOs can come in support of our workers as well. So Greg, please, you first. Welcome, and please introduce yourself.
Yeah, I have been a parish pastor for 22 years, and then was elected district president, where I served for 13 years in the Florida Georgia district. And when I termed out in 2022, I began working with Grace Place Wellness because I really saw the value in caring for church workers. Over that time in the district office, it really became apparent to me that we really need to do everything we can to advocate and support our church workers. So I'm married. I have my wife, Edith, and we live in Woodstock, Georgia. And I have two boys, both married, and six grandkids, which is why we're in Woodstock, Georgia.
Wonderful. Greg, can you tell us a little bit more about Grace Place specifically?
Yeah, Grace Place has been around for a long time. It was started by Dr. John Eckridge back in 1999. He is a medical doctor who was working with a lot of church workers who found that they were experiencing a lot of stress-related diseases. And when he would say, "How are you doing?" they'd say, "Fine," just like a church worker. And he'd say, "Well, your tests aren't really showing that." So he and his wife, Kathy, decided to start a retreat. The retreat grew into how workers can provide better self-care for themselves. And so that went on until 2020, and ironically, I was with Daryl Zimmerman on the very last retreat before COVID hit, and then retreats could not happen. And so we were dormant for about 2 years, and it was really, in that time, it was acquired by Lutheran Church Extension Fund as a part of their ministry. But we found that it was more and more difficult to get commitments for retreats like that. And so I came on looking at it, how can we continue to expand this ministry and really care for church workers? And one of the things, and we can get into this a little bit later, but one of the things that I discovered is very often church workers can't really do a lot of self-care because they don't have the support or the environment to do that self-care in. And that really is where I'm trying to put the focus, is how can we help our laity understand the value of caring for their workers? So that's really where part of the focus. Another area that we've introduced since I came on board was sabbaticals. Sabbaticals aren't new, of course, but we've tried to re-emphasize them. And LCEF is now sponsoring a scholarship. Last year we started, for the very first time, we offered $5,000 scholarships. This year we're offering six $7,500 scholarships. And my hope is that that will continue to grow as people see the value in sabbaticals for church workers. So that's kind of a little nutshell of what we're doing.
Wonderful. Thank you. And Dr. Yonke, Bev, welcome. Please introduce yourself to our listeners.
Certainly. I've been trained as a clinical psychologist and have enjoyed the opportunity to teach out at Concordia Mequon for many years before going into private practice. And in private practice, it became intensely clear to me that I am a Christian psychologist, which says it becomes important to determine how do you invite people to bring the resources of their faith with them into the process of healing, rebound, and renewal. And in private practice, therefore, I called my clinic Christian Counseling Services. And I began serving clergy and Lutheran teachers and their families. And for almost 25 years in private practice, pastors and church workers schooled me on what it is to be a church worker, since I could only determine what that might be like by looking from the outside in. And they helped me understand depletion and unrealistic expectations and financial constraints. At the same time, this joy in serving and being able to serve lovely, faithful people. And at that time, my pastor and I began having some conversations about how might it be useful if we could provide programming for clergy, their parishes, and their people. And we thought, well, who would attend that? And as it turns out, over 1,000 pastors have already attended the Doxology Classic program. We'll talk about that perhaps a little bit later. And we're so pleased that the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, particularly the Office of National Mission, has been so eager to support Doxology's work in providing retreats and seminars and conferences for pastors and for laity, and to turn to us for some special needs. For example, during COVID, as Greg suggested, most things were shut down. And yet with the help of Office of National Mission, we were able to spend about 18 months providing retreats for LCMS clergy at no cost to them whatsoever. And we didn't have enough chairs in the rooms for pastors who wanted to attend due to simply loving and caring so much that they had moved to a place of depletion. So Doxology has now been around since about 2008 when we offered our first program. And we've moved beyond my first colleague's retirement. Dr. Sinkbile has retired, and now I'm working with Pastor David Fleming, who is a wonderful source of spiritual encouragement and care for pastors, teachers, and their people.
What a joy to have you on, and who better to have this conversation with than the two of you. We begin every episode of this season asking these two main questions, and maybe Greg, you'd be willing to answer these for us. First of all, how would you describe to people what God's mission is, and how would you describe worker wellness as being related to that mission?
Yeah, I think a simple answer is God's mission is to reach people with the good news of salvation and new life in Jesus. Obviously, you can go more complex than that, but I think the focus for church worker wellness is, you know, church workers are called to equip the saints. And we need that. So, you know, these church workers are really trained how to reach people, not only within the ministry, but also beyond the ministry, and set an example. And so when we don't have church workers, it really creates a problem. And actually, it's a problem that we're beginning to see all around us. So we need more church workers.
So what you're saying is if the mission of God on earth is to have that good news delivered and our church workers are the deliverers, then of course they're central to the mission.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They're key. And we want to make sure that they have every opportunity to fulfill the call that God has placed on their lives.
I see you nodding your head, Bev. I am so curious to know, because I come from the inside in some way. I'm married to a pastor, but what kind of trends are you seeing? Or when you sat down with pastors specifically and church workers, you said that they schooled you in what it is to be a church worker. What did you learn? What are some of the trends that you're seeing among our church workers, specifically, I'd say, since 2020 on?
That's a marvelous question, and sometimes as we talk about pastors, we seem to allow ourselves to imagine that they're all alike and they all experience similar issues in identical ways. That's a risk, and yet there are patterns that emerge after speaking with so many pastors clinically, in the clinical setting, as well as looking at published research. We don't have to go too far to look back to the LCMS church worker wellness research. That was wonderful. The LCMS conducted that. It was the largest study of its kind. And what it told us, I think, was a wake-up call for many. When they published it, they published that 24% of survey workers had been diagnosed with depression or anxiety. I think that came as a surprise to many, that one out of four of our church workers are experiencing that level of distress. We know as well that the other trends that emerge pretty routinely include things such as burnout. Coming from research both in and outside of the church, a 2024 study done by Barna was fascinating as it looked at pastors. And in the year 2024, Barna discovered that 38% of U.S. pastors had seriously considered walking away from full-time ministry. That was shocking. They found that pastors under 45 years of age were particularly vulnerable to the stressors and had not necessarily identified healthy ways of responding to them. When we look at Christian school teachers and their well-being and spirituality and burnout, what the trend lines tell us is that they need support, they need autonomy, they need respect, they need work-life balance, they need tools for combating things like emotional fatigue and burnout and stress, and dealing with conflicts with parents that are, not surprisingly, occurring from time to time. But pastors and teachers alike share these things. Rising stress and burnout. Mental health strain is an ongoing reality for our church workers. Some vocational uncertainty for pastors or teachers as financial realities begin to intrude on the reality. We're out on the West Coast with doxology, and a pastor came up and he said, "It's getting harder and harder. My treasurer told me there are 3 months of salary left in our endowment." So there's some financial realities that are crushing our church workers as well. And boundaries. Church workers are very reluctant to establish boundaries, and technology is beginning to blur work, home, life, vocations, as members can text, email them. Parents imagine the teacher should be available in school and out of school. And finally, there's a desire to have a family life that's meaningful, which sometimes means saying no to extra programs, parish engagement. So there is a grand desire to serve, and yet the accrual of stress and caring has consequences, and we need to attend to them in some really remarkably focused ways to be helpful.
Yeah, if I could add to that, Stephanie, I think, you know, Bev mentioned the financial concerns, and you know, as a church worker, many of our church workers live paycheck to paycheck, and they're concerned with dwindling attendance and how that's going to impact them financially and how they support their family in many cases. And some are having to take on additional responsibilities, other jobs to make ends meet, or their spouse is working several jobs in order to help support the family and make ends meet. And these are issues that are beyond their control because, as you well know, as a wife of a pastor, these decisions on salary and benefits aren't made by the pastor and his wife, right? They're made by people who are making them beyond their control, and so they're made on behalf of the pastor and his wife or the church worker, and so, you know, there is little recourse. So that's really a primary concern, there are a number of things being done right now which are really exciting to see with Concordia University of Wisconsin and the Batterman School for Business. So we have some really good things on the horizon, but there are also the cultural concerns. You know, we're living in one of the most divisive times in the history of our nation, when we talk politically, when we talk, you know, theologically, when we talk about just about anything these days, people get divided on it. And so, you know, we're tiptoeing very often as church workers because we don't want to upset the apple cart. We know that church is not as relevant to many as it once was. In fact, I just saw a study that Barna did, came out on September 2nd, saying that Gen Z and millennialists are now the most regular church attenders.
Saw that same thing.
And it's 2 weeks a month. That's a big jump, right? They're saying that the Gen Xers and the boomers and the elders, they're just not there. And only a third of the Gen Zs are even identifying as churchgoers. So I take that back. A third identify as nuns. They have no faith whatsoever. So You know, we have these concerns about, you know, how can we be a part of our community? And we got to stop isolating. We have to be in the community as a light for Jesus so that people will see the value in their faith. I think that's, you know, and the other thing that I would really quickly mention is concerns over expectations. And I think this is really relevant since COVID. I think ministry is different today than it was 50 years ago. Issues have become more complex and nuanced. I'm sure, Bev, that you see this all the time in your practice. The pastor that my grandparents had never had to deal with any of these family issues that have become so common today among us. Church workers have to totally adapt and learn new things and try new solutions as the culture continues to rapidly change. And then there are unrealistic expectations that have come about since COVID, right? I mean, how many teachers in Lutheran schools taught online before COVID hit, right? They had to learn how to do that, but they had to learn overnight. How many pastors did online services? There were some, but many of them had to learn technology and things. And the beautiful thing is they did. I was amazed during that time as I would survey the pastors, at least in the Florida, Georgia district and beyond that, actually, how many stepped up and really figured it out. And, you know, things were rocky, but these are all the issues that our pastors continue to deal with, our church workers, and we're still coming out of a lot of that. So the unrealistic expectations also are a big concern. And, you know, this is one of the trends that we're seeing in the church, not just in the Lutheran church, and certainly not just in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, but in all churches.
Oh, I have one follow-up question, Dr. Yonke, when you were sharing all of those statistics with us, which I think is that from the 2017 LCMS survey that we did of church workers? Is that correct?
The 2017 to 2019 survey, right. And interestingly enough, as Greg has suggested, COVID took what was already a difficult situation and stood it on its head and made churchly life for every congregation a challenge, if not impossible. 55% of pastors who leave the ministry do so because the expectations Right. their congregation has for them disagrees with the pastor's expectations of what the ministry is all about. So it's becoming increasingly difficult.
So we can surmise then those statistics have probably
worsened.
But yes, okay, worsened so. Since then.
And I think part of the problem, and maybe Bev, you see it from a different perspective, but I think part of the problem is the conversation between church workers and laity never happens. Those expectations continue to be unmet because both sides often dig in their heels and fail to have that conversation to say, what are the expectations? You know, how do we deal
right.
with
oh,
this?
Expectations and conversation go hand in hand. Yeah. One part of our curriculum for lay leaders and pastors is to bring them together in a retreat situation. And they routinely identify about 90 minutes where pastors and lay people speak together on some focused topics. Is one of the most valuable things of the whole weekend. We don't ask them to talk to their pastor. We ask them to form groups and talk to other pastors. And both pastors and people alike regard it as a time of candor and a time to really see things from a perspective they may not have considered as carefully as they might.
It's interesting, too. We're doing a retreat now, just a day and a half retreat with pastors and three or four key lay leaders to talk about how do we build this partnership. And it's amazing how foreign that really is to other people, you know, that this is necessary. But there may have been a time when it wasn't necessary. It was just our culture. It was just our protocol. But today that's not the case.
What do you think it is, if we can even take a chance at guessing, what's the essence of being a church worker, whether it's a deaconess, a pastor, a Lutheran school teacher, a DCE, all the list goes on of the called workers that we have. What is it about being a church worker that might make them more prone to facing some of these, you know, mental health crises, burnout? Because I would imagine some people who are listening who are also lay people are thinking, well, yeah, I'm also met with financial constraints within the last decade because of, you know, changes in this or that. I also feel the tension between my work life and my home life. I'm sure that a lot of people who aren't church workers can relate to the breadth of these challenges. So I guess ultimately, what is it about church workers that may be different, that may make them a bit more prone to not having the tools or just struggling with these challenges in general?
I'm sure Bev can give you a clinical. I can tell you from my own personal experience that I felt the burden of the call and the responsibility of the call as a servant of God, you know, that the expectation was that I would serve. And I can tell you that in my last parish, when my kids were in high school, I missed a lot of those activities because I had an elders meeting or I had a council meeting, and that always took priority. And I remember the day that I got set free from that, I said to the chairman of my elders, you know, it's my son's last band concert. And he looked at me and he said, well, you should be there. You shouldn't be at an elders meeting. This is your family. You need to take care of them. And I that gave me a really good perspective. And I used to say to the district, you know, I can get a new job, but I can't get a new family. A family has to take a priority. And I think we're often taught just the opposite, not by words, but by experience.
I would agree that the history of the church worker is one of faithful service, and faithful service is usually translated into something like to give without counting the cost, to be obedient. We are where our pastors are not only preaching and teaching as they ought to do, but they also have to give an account of their sheep and lambs and their care for those sheep and lambs. We have church workers whose work has eternal consequences. So there may be neurosurgeons and donut makers and military people who also work 50, 60, and 70 hours a week, and yet they're not concerned with the eternal well-being of the soul of the individuals with whom they interact. They recognize they have the capacity to influence the well-being and spiritual well-being of 50, 100, 500 people at a time, and they are of critical importance, and they take that seriously. And there is a great deal to do. As a result, their work is never done, and for them, it's a matter of conscience. If there is time that's unallocated, it could be spent designing a brand new Bible study. It could be spent making calls. And so when your boss is God, you make decisions with very different values regarding why must I do this? There's an imperative, a spiritual and eternal imperative to the work our church workers do.
And there is a balance there too, isn't there? I mean, because our boss is God, and yet we have a lot of bosses. And I think that's part of the pressure, you know, we want to please people. That's, you know, I mean, many of us got into ministry because we like to help. We like to serve. And so we respond to that sometimes positively, sometimes negatively. One of my favorite activities when I was in the parish was on my day off, I'd mow my lawn and trim the hedges, and I could stand back and say, it's done. I got 2 weeks before I have to do it again, but it looks good. And in the ministry, you don't often get that feeling. You know, there's always, like Bev said, something more to be done.
And it's so hard to determine what success means in ministry. Is success the baptism of an adult? Is it the baptism of an entire family? Is success something we use metrics to measure? Is it the number of people who are a member of your congregation, the number of children attending your vacation Bible school? And I think sometimes our pastors are driven by metrics instead of being driven by saying, I'm doing the very best I can as God gives me light, and I take seriously the work he sets before me, and by the gifts he gives me, I accomplish what I can. But success is hard to define for the pastor, and it's different from one district and one parish to the next.
Mm-hmm. So from both a biblical perspective and a mental health perspective, which you both can speak into, I think, very well, why is spending time, effort, even financial resources for Synod, for doxology, for Grace Place. Why is it worth it for the wellness of our workers?
I think we have to take seriously the scriptural recommendation that the worker is worthy of his hire. And very often we look at the hire as being a matter of financial certainties and accommodations, and that's certainly important. But the worker is worthy of other things as well, worthy of care and counseling and continuing training. Our worker is worthy of support, having reasonable expectations, having conversations with the individuals responsible for the work that they do. Why spend time and effort and money on a pastor? Well, it's the pastors who bring us the word. It's the pastors who bring us the gifts. It's the pastors who preach, who teach, who pray with us, who pray for us, who baptize us, marry us, who bury us, who care and provide counsel for us. And it's the pastors who sow the seeds. And if we believe that the Great Commission is important, it's important to ensure that the workers of whom we ask so much, that the church has in the past been very interested in supporting the programs that care for the pastors. We have to equip the pastors so they can care for the sheep and lambs entrusted to them.
Yeah, I would also add to that that, you know, we have put a great focus in the LCMS right now on recruitment of new church workers, which is great. But it's made more difficult when you have current church workers who are stressed and unhappy. Unhappy workers who lack care and support are not going to be good recruiters for the Synod. And in addition to recruitment, we have to continually work on educating our laity and encouraging longevity among the current workforce. And I think intentionality is the key. I think, you know, it has to be done purposefully, and it can't just be an afterthought. And I've heard story after story from church workers about the lack of care and the care being kind of an afterthought, just kind of tossed. And you know, there are many scripture passages that direct God's people to care for those who are called to serve. And, you know, those should be taken seriously. They're not just there to you know, kind of say, well, that doesn't matter. But I think also mentally, when a church worker feels secure and cared for, even if they aren't getting rich, you know, if they're paid sufficiently, they can find great joy in their service, and they can find great security in that as well. And while finances are a realistic thing, joy in ministry is rarely tied entirely to money.
Yep, that's absolutely right. So I'm guessing you're sitting at the edge of your seats, waiting to tell a little bit more about doxology and Grace Place, because Greg, you mentioned you wanted to talk about the efforts of probably you too, Bev, but CUW, the Bowerman School of Business. I would love to give you an opportunity to share specific ways that doxology cares for the health of their church workers. Bev, you've already alluded to it. And likewise, specific ways that Grace Place Wellness cares for the health of workers, while also equipping your lay leaders, as you mentioned, Greg, your one-day retreat that you've begun. So please take this time to share briefly what it is that you are doing and how, if it's a lay person listening, how they can get connected, or a church worker listening, how they could plug into the resources you have.
Can I just say this, Bev, before you, I'm going to let you go first, but, you know, people have this impression that we are in competition with one another, and we do very different things. You know, Grace Place is pretty surface level. We're going to be worried about, you know, are you getting enough rest? Are you taking your time off? Are you caring for your family? Those kinds of issues. Doxology, as you'll hear, is a little deeper than that. And then we have among our host of caregivers in the LCMS Shepherd's Canyon, which is more therapeutic. We work great with Concordia Plan Services. We work with Grace Point. We work with a number of different organizations, including Board for National Mission. And we're not in competition. We are all here because we care about church workers. That's the bottom line. And we want to make sure they're getting the right place to get the care they need. So thanks for that little commercial, Bev.
There's a division of labor among us, and we each have points of emphasis which, taken together, I think serve the church very, very well. Doxology's principal program is called the Classic Program, and we usually gather together a group of pastors three different times with three different purposes for the events. And the first time, called the Gathering, a pastor comes for an extended retreat with us 4 days, and we study how it is one cares for the soul, their soul and the souls of others. We examine spiritual diagnosis, spiritual care, and some of the ways that's been honored for ages in the church. And we also have careful examination of self-care as we talk with pastors about depression and compassion fatigue. And we help them to think carefully and personally about emotional intelligence. We examine the role of professional and personal ethics as they serve a flock. We equip them with all kinds of spiritual care tools to use with their flock, as well as to use in their personal life. So we connect the historic role of soul care to the complexities of caring for people in the 21st century, where, as we've suggested, civilization has gone a bit off the rails in terms of what we value, what we think, and what we do. So the first part of the program is vital, as there's a time of spiritual refreshment and renewal and receiving. Pastors receive for 4 days and often leave that part of the program saying, I believe this may have saved my ministry, or I believe this may have saved my marriage, or this has helped me reboot in ways that will inform the rest of my ministry. So it's a very provocative, both academic and personal reflection part of the program. The second part of the program, we say to the pastor, bring at least one lay leader back with you. We had one pastor bring a minibus full of lay leaders, which was great. Pastor's advanced study continues, and lay leaders have an opportunity to spend a weekend acquiring a very deeper understanding of what it means to care for their pastor, support their pastor, to be healthy with their pastor, to support the ministry. So we offer lay leaders specific skills and strategies and facilitate conversations that allow for them to establish goals and an action plan to take home. We talk about healthy church workers. And we have lay leaders who at the end of the weekend go back as ambassadors who, we're going to get our boards together, we're going to get the elders together, we're going to tell them what we've learned. So there's also not only information, but there's inspiration and spiritual, both tools as well as reasons to care for their church and their pastor in important ways. The third part of the Classic Program, we recognize how vital wives are to the well-being of their husbands' work, as well as their husbands' well-being. And so every year we invite any pastor who's gone through our program to come back for a weekend with his wife, where we talk about the pastor and his marriage, the pastor and his family, along with other topics that vary from year to year. Because we know that clergy families live kind of in stained glass fishbowls, which brings challenge as well as blessing. And we want to be able to have people network in some new ways and create wonderful conversations, particularly among wives who have some unique challenges with their families, always promoting healthy pastors, healthy families, and engaging laity to care for them. That's our principal program. Each year, I mentioned, we do about 40 to 45 conferences, and those are on a variety of topics, from Christian sexuality to resilience to care for church workers, as well as providing invited programs to do district conferences for pastors as well as church workers. So in some ways, our goal is to use that professional program for pastors as a centerpiece of what we do. And in addition to that, one thing we've discovered has been vital is we offer every pastor completing a DOCS program 5 hours of consultation. And at first we thought, well, who's going to use that? Who's going to use? And we found out that it's been used widely and wisely by our pastors. And it can be for personal self-care. I don't want to see a psychologist, but I'll talk to you. I've seen you at work, and I know you're not one of those crazy psychologists. Well, thank you. I appreciate the endorsement. And they may seek spiritual care from Pastor David Fleming with crises in their leadership, crises in terms of people for whom they care. So we also have provided special consultative resources to pastors, which they have found to be very, very helpful. So we are happy to design programs and provide them upon invitation as well.
Are you ever home throughout the year on a weekend, Bev?
Sure. Not a lot. we discover that we're usually on the road most Thursdays through Mondays. But that means, hey, important resources are being used in very important ways to make contributions that matter.
And Greg, how about you? Grace Place Wellness, how do you serve church workers and laity?
Well, the truth is we will serve, and when I say we, I mean me, because I am right now the total staff for Grace Place Wellness. We're part of the Ministry Solutions team for LCEF, but I really have a passion to see church workers thrive. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, we're kind of an entry level. So like even the retreat I mentioned, you know, we're going to discover things about some of our laity and maybe be able to recommend the classic program for doxology or some of the programs that are available through Concordia Plan Services or other things that are out there. You know, my goal as part of Grace Place Wellness is to really make sure that we are providing whatever care we can for our church workers to help them thrive as they serve. So, you know, it's not unusual for me to go to a conference and do a breakout on some topic that I have to create because I don't have a catalog. I'm kind of saying this is a product that they want. This is what we're going to create. So I spend a lot of time doing that. And it's good because it helps me too to learn and grow. I've only been doing this 3 years, so this has been a really good challenge for me. Seeing, you know, the needs, talking with a lot of people, and learning, you know, that there is such a great depth of need among our church workers and among our laity, who often are people who have, you know, not grown up in the Lutheran church at all, and they don't understand traditions and protocols and things like that. So they kind of have that need for education as well. So it's really been kind of fascinating. So we offer a retreat where we talk about self-care for church workers and their spouse. We put them in groups where they can learn about themselves and from one another, that accountability. We do some things with sabbaticals, as I mentioned. We're just introducing this new retreat that is designed to really help lay leaders in particular. And as I heard Bev talking, I'm thinking, boy, this could be a great feeder for the program that they're doing, because I think a lot of lay leaders are reluctant to say, we got issues. And we're just trying to help them see what's there. We also offer through Ministry Solutions at LCEF, capital campaigns and clarity visioning process. And I have a part in that I meet with a pastor and his spouse, and I kind of do an assessment with them to see what kind of things are being done or could be done in a particular location for church worker wellness. And then the recommendations are brought into that five-year plan or whatever the visioning plan happens to be. So it's interesting. I meet with groups. I also meet with individual congregations to do like a congregational leader retreat weekend. It's been really kind of interesting to see, because it's just a matter of right now, whatever's the need, I'll do it in order to help our church workers. That's really what I want to do. As long as I have the opportunity, I'm going to take that platform to do what I can to help our church workers thrive, particularly when we see so many vacancies and so many churches that are challenged. I really want to do all that I can to help our districts. And I was a district president, so I get it. And I valued Grace Place Wellness. I valued doxology when I was a district president, because these are resources that helped me as a district president not to have to pull my hair out, although I did do a lot of that. But, you know, the reality is whatever resources are out there. So I want to make sure that I can help meet whatever need is necessary. And I am very blessed and fortunate that LCF has given me the platform to be able to do that. And I want to continue to do that however I can. Sabbaticals, you know, I was able to put together a sabbatical guide that we put online. We're not the only one, but we've got some information there that can help. You'd be surprised, maybe not. Our application for the sabbatical scholarship ends October 31st. It's kind of a pivotal day in the Lutheran Church. But, as we get closer to that date, I do more and more consultations with pastors and laity who are saying, tell me a little bit more about sabbaticals, how they work and how we can get this. So, you know, we're trying to do some coaching in terms of that, a lot of coaching in terms of a specific issue. We're going to try and come up with kind of a triage method to help congregations who may feel like they want to do a capital campaign, or they may want to do a ministry clarity gathering, but they're not quite ready. And so we want to be able to assess and say, hey, here are some things to think about, and here are some things that we can do to help you as you think about them. So those are kinds of some of the things that we're doing. And, you know, ask me tomorrow and there'll be some more.
With your roles, both of you, as being some of our top synodical leaders in our LCMS, how are you sure that even as you're caring for the souls, caring for the bodies of these church workers in very real ways, how are you sure to care for your own health, your own wellness? And what have you learned through that that you could pass on to those listening?
Having talked with so many people about resilience and self-care and wellness, some of it's rubbed off on me, which is actually a wonderful thing. I'm beginning to believe it's possible, and I've discovered that much about self-care has to do with a choice to imagine that working constantly isn't a particularly good idea. We have the example of Jesus, right? There's more work to do in the Sea of Galilee, and yet he found a boat and he got away, showing us there are limits to the urgency. He modeled dependence on God the Father, which is a part of our rest and wellness. And he teaches us about pointing to the greater work to be done, for which we need to be prepared. We need to rest. So I enjoy doing simple things. I choose to step away, and I choose to actually block in some time, particularly with all the travel that I'm fortunate to do. Blocking in time for lunch with friends. Laughter is revitalizing. Mutual conversation and consolation is a delight. Stepping outside of the crush of important things to do, rebooting, and daily being able to receive in terms of time for meditation and for prayer and being still and knowing that God is God.
Mm. I would second some of those things, Bev. I think one of the things I used to say over and over is to church workers is you can't change the past, but you can decide the future. Mm-hmm. So, you know, make a decision about how you want to go forward. Don't keep looking back. If you keep looking back, trying to move forward, you're going to run into a wall. So you got to keep looking forward. And my first year as a district president, it was in the midst of the housing crisis. And so I had moved from Atlanta, where I had a parish, to Orlando. And my wife ended up having to stay in Atlanta for a year. We lived apart for a year. And I made a decision that was not going to be like that anymore. And that's part of the reason that we're back here. When I finished my term, my wife said, you know, I'd like to move closer to our kids and to our grandkids. And I said, let's do it. And so that family time is really, for me, a balance, keeping that balance. It's really helpful. We try and spend as much time with their own busy lives, you know, as we can. I try to exercise and get sufficient sleep. I think that's a key, is getting sufficient sleep. I admit that I didn't always do that, and it makes a huge difference. It really does make a difference. I find that with a sufficient amount of sleep, you get perspective and you can look at things differently and in a new way. And that's really important. I try to continually grow by learning, reading, listening to podcasts, watching other things that will help me to grow, particularly in this area. I took coaching classes, you know, for instance, and I just continually learning and growing. And then devotional time. Daryl Zimmerman used to share on the Grace Place retreats the 12 words of wisdom. He would say, I want you to memorize these words. I don't eat that. Walk like you're late, and get an accountability partner. And I've really taken that to heart, and I found that those things have helped me personally. And I use that often. So I give Daryl props for that, because it's been very helpful.
Thank you very much, both of you, for joining me. I'm also pleased to say that just working for Synod while also being married to a pastor, I'm proud of the work that our Synod, and by our Synod, I mean our RSOs, like Doxology, I mean Grace Place working with LCEF, I mean our Concordia systems, our seminaries, all coming together to revitalize this opportunity to really care for our workers. And as you said earlier, Greg, we do have the special initiative in our Synod called Set Apart to Serve, where we're trying to come and work to recruit church workers. And the Pastoral Education Department at Synod, which is in charge of, you know, leading that charge, is working closely with worker wellness, as they should be, because we realize that we need good workers to recruit. And we want to recruit men and women into the ministry who we will then be able to support and care for well. And so they very much go hand in hand. And I thank you so much for the service that both Doxology provides and Grace Place Wellness. And I rejoice with you the health and well-being that you're nurturing in our church workers. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks for the visit. Appreciated the chance to talk with you.
Thanks for joining us. If you liked what you heard, please leave us a review and don't forget to click the follow or subscribe button so that you don't miss out on upcoming episodes. God's Mission Here is a podcast that discusses Christ's gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation, and how He delivers those gifts where you live and serve.